The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandigedra Devalagam.
තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස ඊතං සන්තං ඊතං ඵනිතං යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සම්බූපදීපටි නිස්සග්ගෝ තණ්හක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාන. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, is the 28th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. Right view, the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, is defined as the knowledge of all the four noble truths, namely that of suffering, its arising, its cessation, and the path leading to its cessation. This is a pointer to the fact that some understanding of cessation or Nibbana is essential for the practice of the path. According to a discourse among the tools of the Anguttara Nikaya, there are two conditions for the arising of this right view. Dveme bhikkhave paccaya sammāditthya uppādāya katame dve paratocha ghoso yonisocha manasikāro. Monks, there are these two conditions for the arising of right view. Which two? Hearing from another and radical reflection. Strictly speaking, yoniso manasikara or radical reflection is attention by way of source or matrix. The deeper dimensions of its meaning would have come to light in our discussion of Patisamuppada with reference to a quotation from the Mahapadana Sutta in one of our earlier sermons. There we saw how Bodhisattva Vipassi went on reflecting from the very end of the formula of Patisamuppada of dependent arising in reverse order and gradually arrived at the true source. Kim inukhosati jaramarnam hoti, kim pachya jaramarnam, jatiya khosati jaramarnam hoti, jati pachya jaramarnam. What being there does decay and death come to be? Conditioned by what is decay and death? Birth being there does decay and death come to be? Conditioned by birth is decay and death. In this way, he directed his radical reflection gradually upwards, beginning from decay and death, and at last came to the samsaric vortex between consciousness and name and form, which we discussed at length. This is an illustration of the deepest sense of yoniso manasikara as an attitude essential for seeing the law of dependent arising within one's own experience. By now, we have already laid bare some first principles for the arising of this radical reflection in the form of similes like the magic show and the chess game. Those similes have illustrated for us the first principle that a thing originates from and its thingness depends on the psychological responses and mental traits of the person concerned. The magic show and the chess game have exposed the fact that the signs and symbols which we conceive to be out there owe their significance and symbolic nature to the deep-rooted psychological mainsprings of lust, hate and delusion. It was while discussing how the Suchidoma Sutta presents the question of radical reflection that we were forced to stop our last sermon. To the question of Yakha Suchidoma as to the source of lust, hate, delight and terror, the Buddha replied that they arise hence, from hence itself. In the Pali verses, the Yakha's questions කුතෝ නිධාන කුතෝජා කුතෝ සමුට්ඨාය මෙට් විත් ද රිප්ලයිස් ඉතෝ නිධාන ඉතෝජා ඉතෝ සමුට්ඨාය ෆ්‍රොම් ද බුද්ධස්සයි. This ito, hence, means from within oneself. This is clear from the term Atta Sambhuta, self-begotten, in the reply given by the Buddha. It is to illustrate this self-begotten nature that the Buddha brings in the similes of the banyan tree and the Malwa creeper. When the runners coming down from the branches of a banyan tree reach the ground and get rooted, after a time, it will be difficult to distinguish the original trunk of the tree from its offsprings. So also is the case with the parasitic Malwa creeper. When the seed of a Malwa creeper takes root in the fork of a tree and grows up, it not only kills the tree, but also overspreads it in such a way as to obscure its origin. From these similes, we can infer that the self-begotten nature of those psychological states are also generally overlooked or ignored. They are revealed only to radical reflection, to attention by way of source or matrix. That is why the Buddha emphasizes the need for discerning the true source. That it is an injunction directly relevant to the practice is clearly expressed in the last verse in the Suchilom Sutta. Yenam pajananti yato nidanam tenam vinodenti sunohi lakh te duttaram ogamimam taranti atinna pubbam apunar bhavat. And they that know where from it springs, they dispel it. Listen, O yakh, they cross this flood, so hard to cross, never crossed before, to become no more. The commentary takes the term yato nidanam in this verse as a reference to the second noble truth of craving. The term Atta Sambhuta is explained as arisen within oneself, Attani Sambhuta, but not much attention is given to it. However, if we are to elicit the deeper meaning of these lines, we have to take up for comment this term occurring in the preceding verse. We came across this term earlier too in our discussion of a verse in the Kosala Samyutta. Lobho doso ca moho ca purisan papa cetasan hinsanti atta svambhuta taca sarangva sampanam. Greed and hate and delusion too sprung from within work harm on him of evil wit as death its fruit on the reed for which the bark is fit. In this context too, the term atta sambhuta is mentioned. When we reflect deeply on the significance of this term, we are first of all reminded of the vortex simile we employed to explain the reciprocal relationship between consciousness and name and form in our discussion of the law of dependent arising as stated in the Mahanidana Sutta at the very outset of this series of sermons. Atta Sambhuta, literally rendered, would mean originating from oneself, but this so-called oneself, conceived as a unit or center of activity, is actually based on a duality. The notion of a self is to be traced to an interrelation between two conditions, that is, the reciprocal relationship between consciousness and name and form, which we discussed earlier too. Vijnana paccaya namarupam, namarupaccaya vijnanam. Dependent on consciousness is name and form. Dependent on name and form is consciousness. As the Bodhisattva Vipassi understood through radical reflection, consciousness turns back from name and form. It does not go beyond. Pachyudavattati khoyedam vinyanam namarupampa naparam gacchati. Here is a vortex, a turning round. The delusion or ignorance is the non-understanding of the reciprocal relationship between these two. The understanding of it is the insight into the true source of all defilements. To hark back to our simile of the chess game, this non-understanding is like the split into two sides. The two friends quite amicably prepare the chess board and the pieces, but for them to play the game, there should be two sides. It is after this bifurcation and confrontation as two sides that the actual game starts with its vicissitudes of winning and losing. Preparations grow, yielding the consequences of wish fulfillments and disappointments to the competitors. This is the norm underlying this bifurcation. So ignorance is the non-understanding of the fact that the basis of this atta-sambhava or springing up from within, namely the dichotomy, is in fact a mutual interrelation between two conditions. In other words, the ignorance which gives rise to those preparations that go to create the vortex between consciousness and name and form is the non-understanding of the mutual interrelation implicit in this vortical interplay. That is why one is instructed in insight meditation to reflect on preparations relating to name and form. An insight into those preparations reveals this mutual interrelation. There is such a dichotomy implicit in the term atta-sambhava. The commentary explains the correlative yato-nidānam, whence arising, as a reference to tanha or craving. But it is actually an allusion to ignorance. The true source is non-understanding. That is why the Buddha, in presenting the formula of paṭisamuppāda, went beyond craving and placed ignorance at the head of the series of prelims. Very often, the commentators mention this as a possible point of controversy. But the real reason for its precedence is the fact that ignorance is more primary than craving as a condition. It is more basic than craving. When one probes into the conditions for craving, one discovers ignorance as its root. That is why, in stating the law of Paṭisamuppāda in the reverse order, the Buddha used the expression avijjāyātvevāsesavirāga-nirodhā, etc., with the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance, etc. It is with the cessation of ignorance that the entire series of conditions move in the opposite direction. So ignorance is primary as a condition. We can explain this primacy in another way. Now, upādāna is that grasping of the object of craving. Actually, it signifies a holding on to something. What gives the impression that the object of craving is something that can be grasped is a lack of a deep understanding of the principle of duality. Craving finds something to hold on to precisely because one presumes that there actually exists a thing to be grasped. That is how it gets object status. This way we can explain the basic reason for the recurrent birth in samsara as the non-understanding of the mutual interrelation between conditions. This sustains the notion of duality. There is a verse in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta which throws more light on the meaning of the term atta-sambhava. The verse, which is found also in the section on the 8th in the Anguttara Nikaya as well as in the Udana, runs as follows. Tulamatulancha sambhavam bhavasankharam avasaji muni adhyatarato samabhito abhindi kavachamiva atta-sambhava. That preparation for becoming the sage gave up, whence arise an equal and an unequal, inwardly wrapped and concentrated, he split like an armor the origin of self. At the spot called Chāpāla Chetiya, the Buddha renounced the preparations pertaining to the lifespan and declared that he will attain Parinibbana 3 months hence. There was an earth tremor immediately afterwards, and the Buddha uttered this pen of joy to explain its significance. However, this verse has puzzled many scholars, both Eastern and Western. The commentators themselves are in a quandary. They advance alternative interpretations, particularly in connection with the riddle-like terms tulang atulang, as evidenced by the commentaries to the Digha Nikaya and Anguttara Nikaya. According to the first interpretation given, tulang stands for whatever pertains to the sense sphere. And Atulam refers to the fine material and immaterial sphere. The second interpretation, prefixed by an or else, Athava, takes Thulam to mean both the sense sphere and the fine material sphere, and Atulam to refer only to the immaterial sphere. In the third interpretation, Thulam is taken to mean of little karmic result, and Atulam to mean of great result. The fourth interpretation tries to tackle the difficult term in a different way altogether. Thulanti thulento thirento, Atulancha sambhavanti, Nibbananchiva sambhavanchi. Thulam means comparing, determining. Atulancha sambhavan means Nibbana and becoming. Here the word Thulam is presumed to be the present participle. To add to the confusion, Nettipagaran advances yet another interpretation. Thulanti sankhara dhatu, Atulanti Nibbana dhatu. Thulam means sankhara element, Atulam means Nibbana element. It seems, however, that we have to approach the whole problem from a different angle altogether. The twin term Thulam Atulam most probably represents the principle of duality we have discussed at length in this series of sermons. Thulam and Atulam in a pairwise combination convey the idea of equality and inequality as antonyms. The phrase Thulam Atulam cha sambhavam is suggestive of that dichotomy which forms the basis of the self idea. Atta sambhava, or the origin of the self notion, is traceable to this dichotomy, which is like the two friends confronting each other in a game of chess. The two sides of the game may be taken as two halves of the same thing, standing opposite to each other. This is the tragicomedy of the situation. It is on these two halves, or this dichotomy, that the origin of the notion of self is based. A clear enunciation of this truth is found in the Sutta Nipata. For instance, the following verse of the Margandhya Sutta brings out the principle of dichotomy rather rhetorically. Satchanti so brahmano king vadei, musati vaso vivade thakena, yasmin samang visamang chapinati, sakena vadam patsam yujayi. What could the Brahmin speak of as true? What could he debate calling something false? By what criterion could he, in whom there is no distinction between equal and unequal, join issue in a debate? We come across a similar verse in the Attadanda Sutta of the Sutta Nipata. Na samesu, na omesu, na ussesu vadati muni, santosu vita macharo, na deti, na nirasati. The sage does not grade himself among equals, inferiors or superiors. Being at peace and with selfishness gone, he neither takes up nor throws away. Here again, the issue is the triple conceit. It is by dispelling conceit that the sage entertains no inclinations to grade himself among equals, inferiors or superiors. Peaceful and unselfish as he is, he neither acquires nor rejects. Here we see a reference to that dichotomy. The same idea comes up in another guise in the following verse of the Tuvataka Sutta of the Sutta Nipata, which can be an incentive to the recollection of peace, upasamanusa. Adhyatvame bhupasame, nanyato bhikkhu santinye seye, adhyatang upasantasse, natthiyatang kuto nirattang. Let the monk inwardly calm himself. Let him not seek peace from outside. To one who is inwardly calm, there is nothing taken up or rejected. We came across the two terms attang nirattang earlier too in our discussion of a verse in the Duttattaka Sutta. There the line attang nirattang nahitasa athi meant the absence of the idea of taking up and rejecting in an arhat. Very often scholars interpret the term attham in this context as self, which in our opinion is incorrect. The phrase nādeti na nirasyati gives a clear hint as to the etymology of this term. It is derived from da, from root da, prefixed by a, giving ādātta, which by syncopation becomes ātta, which again by shortening of the vowel comes as atta. Niratta is derived from nirasati. These two terms suggestive of duality remind us of the water pump, as we mentioned in our discussion of the vortex. There is nothing really automatic even in a water pump, which takes in and throws out. Due to these two aspects in the mechanism of a water pump, we call it a unit. From the point of view of a water pump, it is capable of performing both functions. It is from this point of view that we attribute a unitary significance to it. In this very concept of a unit, one can discern the delusion involved. Delusion is the apex of the vicious triangle greed, hate and delusion. Greed and hate are the two feelers directed from the apex delusion. Though we regard them as two functions, the taking in and throwing out are simply two aspects of the same function. All this points to the depth of the idea of duality and to the vortex simile, which our commentarial tradition seems to have ignored. It is the same theme of duality that comes up in the first two lines of that cryptic verse of the Brahmanavagga in the Dhammapada we had occasion to quote earlier. Jasa parang aparang va para aparang navijyati. To that Brahmin, that is the Arahant, there is neither a Fadasho nor a Hidasho nor both. There is something extraordinary about this statement. Against this background, we can now advance a plausible interpretation to the puzzling verse we had quoted earlier in this discussion. The first two lines, Tulamatulanta Sambhavam, Bhava Sankharang Avasajimuni, could be understood as follows. The sage renounced the preparations for becoming, which give rise to a distinction between equal and unequal. That is to say, the supreme sage gave up those preparations productive of the dichotomy between the concepts of equal and unequal. Now that next two lines, Ajhatarato Samahito Abhindi Kavachamiva Akta Sambhavam, could be explained as follows. Inwardly content and concentrated, he broke up the point of origin of self like an armor. This breaking up of the armor happened not at the moment he uttered this verse, but at the moment he attained perfect enlightenment. Then what is the provocation for making such a declaration at this juncture? The Buddha renounced the preparations pertaining to the lifespan, Ayu Sankhara, after several requests to that effect by Mara. It may seem that the Buddha bowed down to Mara's request and that he came under Mara's sway when he declared that the Tathagata's Parinibbana will take place 3 months hence. But the true implication of the verse in question is that the armor of Mara, the armor of self-origin, Atta-sambhava, has been broken down already and as such is not within the clutches of Mara. Some scholars seem to identify this giving up of preparations for becoming, Bhava-sankhara, with the renouncing of preparations pertaining to the lifespan, Ayu-sankhara. But there is a distinction between these two. The former, that is Bhava-sankhara, are preparations productive of existence, which go to build up a bhava. These the Buddha had already done away with by breaching the samsaric vortex between vinyana and nāmarūpa. Chinnang vattang navattati. The whirlpool cuts off worlds no more. Those eddies are no longer active in that consciousness. Preparations pertaining to the lifespan, Ayusankhara, have to be explained differently. The term Ayusankhara, mentioned in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, refers to the ability the Buddha possessed by virtue of developing the four bases of success, the dipada of lengthening his lifespan. Because Venerable Ananda did not invite him at the correct moment to make use of that ability, he renounced it at Chapala Chetya. That renouncing is compared in that sutta itself to a vomiting. The Buddha tells Ananda that it is not in the nature of a Tathagata to take in what he has already vomited, even for the sake of life. So then, Ayusankhara and Bhavasankhara have to be distinguished between. Preparations pertaining to the lifespan are not the same as preparations productive of existence or becoming. Understood in this way, it becomes clear that all the attachments, aversions, and delusions in the world stem from a non-understanding of the fact that the duality we have discussed so far is actually an interrelation. It is as if the two friends who amicably prepared the chessboard forgot their friendship when they confronted each other as two sides. This duality is a very subtle problem. The Buddha has pointed out how to resolve it through understanding by means of various meditation techniques. Perhaps the best illustration is the meditative attention by way of elements as stated in the suttas. I have already mentioned about this to some extent in a previous sermon while discussing the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. If you are to analyze this technique of meditative attention by way of elements from a practical point of view, we may cite the relevant section from the Mahahattipadopama Sutta preached by Venerable Sariputta. Addressing his fellow monks, Venerable Sariputta says, Katamach also Patavidhatu. Patavidhatu siya Ajjhatika siya Bahira. Katamach also Ajjhatika Patavidhatu. Chang Ajjhattang Pachyattang Kakhalang Kharigatang Padinang Sayatidang. Kesa Loma Nakha Danta Tacho. Mangsang Naharu Athiyati Minja Vakkang. Hadayang Yakanang Kilomakam Pishakam Paphasang. Antang Antagunang Udariyang Kharisang. Yang vāpana anyampi kinchi ajjhattaṁ pachyattaṁ kakkhalaṁ kharigataṁ upādinnaṁ ayaṁ uccata avusu ajjhattikā patavidā. Jāce vakhopana ajjhattikā patavidā, yāce bāhirā patavidā, patavidā tu revesa, taṁ ne taṁ mam, ne soham asmi, ne me so attāti, eva me taṁ yathābhūtaṁ sammapanya dattabhaṁ. Evametang yathabhutang sammapanya jiswa patavidhatya nibbindati patavidhatya chittang virāje. What, friends, is the earth element? The earth element may be either internal or external. What, friends, is the internal earth element? Whatever is internal, belonging to oneself, hard, solid, and clung to, that is, head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidney, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, large intestines, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else is internal belonging to oneself, hard, solid, and clung to. This is called, friends, the internal eighth element. Now, whatever is the internal eighth element and whatever is the external earth element, both are simply the earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is, with right wisdom, thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Having seen it as it actually is, with right wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element, becomes dispassionate towards the earth element. Venerable Sariputta has not given here instances of the external earth element, because it is obvious enough, that is, whatever is external to the body. A statement that is of paramount importance here is the following. Yacheva kuhapana ajhatika patavidhatu, yache bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. Now whatever is the internal earth element and whatever is the external earth element, both are simply the earth element. When regarded as earth element, both are the same. This is the premise from which insight takes off. That should be seen as it actually is with right wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. With this insight into the earth element with right wisdom, one gets disenchanted with it and becomes dispassionate. As we pointed out earlier too, the term virāga, usually rendered by detachment or dispassion, has a nuance suggestive of a fading away. Here the verb virājeti clearly brings out that nuance. Thus patavidhāti acittaṁ virājeti seems to imply something like, he makes the earth element fade away from his mind. We have already quoted such instances as pītya ca virāga, with the fading away of joy, and avijjā virāga, with the fading away of ignorance, highlight this nuance of the term virāga. In this context too, it seems the function of disenchantment, nibbida, is to see that whatever color the earth element had infused in the mind is made to fade away. This is a detachment as well as a decoloration. What then is the true purpose of resolving the distinction between internal and external with regard to the earth element? The purpose is the breaking up of the foundation for cravings, conceits and views. For me to acquire some object out of craving, that object has to exist apart from me, and I have to stand apart from it. The statement, this is mine, presupposes a duality between me and mine. Similarly, the statement, this am I, expressive of conceit, smacks of duality. For instance, one gazing at a mirror is imperceptibly involved in this duality when he tries to compare his face with its reflection on the mirror. This is the irony of the situation in ordinary life. But what we have here in this sutta is the opposite viewpoint. Not this is mine. Not this am I. Not this is myself. What fosters this opposite point of view is the very absence of the distinction between the internal and the external. The fundamental basis for acquisition or measuring is gone. It is as if the unending game of chess with all its vicissitudes has ended in a peaceful draw. As a matter of fact, our entire samsaric existence is a chess game between the organic upādhinna and the inorganic anupādhinna. For instance, the four elements within this body, the grass par excellence or the clung to, and the four elements as nutrition and atmosphere, are always in conflict in their game of chess. This chess game has as its vicissitudes the disturbances of the three humors, wind, bile and phlegm on the physical side, and greed, hate and delusion on the mental side. These disturbances are to a great extent the outcome of this forced dichotomy. The task before a meditator, therefore, is the resolving of this conflict by a penetrative understanding of the mutual interrelation between the two sides, internal and external. When the gap between the two is removed, the mind becomes equanimous. We are told that the contemplation of the four elements is an effective means of developing equanimity. Among the parts of our body, there are some we pride on and cherish, Some others, like excreta and urine, we abhor and detest. When regarded as mere elements, attachment and revulsion give place to equanimity. A description of the contemplation on elements as found in the Satipatthana Sutta clearly illustrates this fact. The relevant section runs as follows. Punicha param bhikkave bhikkhu imameva kayam yathatitam yathapanhitam dhadu sopachavekkhati athi imasmin kaye patuhi dhatu apo dhatu tejo dhatu vayo dhatu thi. Say yathapi bhikkave dakho go ghatako va go ghatakante vasi va gavim vadhitva චාතුම් මහපතේ බිලසෝ පටී භජිත්වා නිසින්නෝ අස්ස. ඒව මේව කෝ භික්කවේ බික්කු ඉම මේව කායන් යථාටිතන් යථා පනහිතන් ධාතු සෝපච්චවෙක්කති. අත්තිී මස්මින් කායේ පටවිධාතු ආපෝධාතු වාය තේජෝධාතු වායෝධාතුති. Again a monk reflects on this same body as it stands and as it is disposed as consisting of elements. Thus, in this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element and the air element. Just as a skilled butcher or his apprentice, having killed a cow, were seated at the crossroads with it cut up into small pieces, so too a monk reflects on this same body as it stands and as it is disposed, as consisting of elements thus. In this body, there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. It is noteworthy that the monk is instructed to reflect on this same body as it stands and as it is disposed. Imameva kayam yathatitam yathapanhitam. These words are particularly significant in that they do not imply an atomistic or microscopic analysis. The four elements are already there in the body, and though it is mentioned in brief here, in other discourses, the organic instances for each of them are described at length. The simile used in connection with this analysis is highly significant. When a butcher or his apprentice kills a cow, cuts it into small pieces, and sits at the crossroads ready to sell the meat, he is no longer particular about the cow from which it came. He is conscious of it merely as a heap of meat. Similarly, the contemplation by way of elements inculcates an equanimous attitude. Just as the distinction between the upadhinna and the anupadhinna is suggestive of the duality between the organic and the inorganic, the distinction between ajhat and bahidha has relevance to the duality between one's own and another's. This aspect of the reflection on the elements emerges in the summary-like section that follows. The ajhattam va kaye kayanupasi viharati, bahidha va kaye kayanupasi viharati, ajhatta bahidha va kaye kayanupasi viharati. In this way, he abides contemplating the body as a body internally. Or he abides contemplating the body as a body externally. Or he abides contemplating the body as a body both internally and externally. Here too, the aim is to break down the dichotomy between one's own and another's. This contemplation is of a purpose to the extent that by it, one realizes the fact that whether internal or external, it is just the four elements. This norm is succinctly expressed as yatha idam tatha etam, yatha etam tatha idam. Just as this, so is that. Just as that, so is this. Our minds are obsessed by the perception of diversity, nanatasanya. According to color and form, we distinguish objects in the outside world and give them names. It's a burden or a strain to the mind. The reflection by way of elements, as given in the Satipatthana Sutta, could even be appreciated as a step towards the perception of unity. Ekatasanya. From this closer perception of diversity, it tends to relaxation and unification of the mind. So the purpose of this reflection by way of the elements peculiar to the discourses is to look upon the elements as void. In accordance with the Buddha's advice, dhatuyo sunyato passa, look upon the elements as void. However, for some reason or other, perhaps due to the influence of some Indian schools of philosophy with a slant towards materialism, some Buddhist sects indulge in academic subtleties which seem to obsess the mind with the four elements, with concepts about them, instead of the simpler reflection on elements characteristic of the suttas. Originally, the purpose was to erase the four elements from the mind. The original purpose was to make the four elements the amorphous primaries which masquerade as form in the minds of beings for incalculable eons to fade away from the mind. But what happened later was to revel in metamystic analysis, which more or less followed the way of thinking peculiar to materialism. It ended up in hair-splitting analysis, even literally, painting, for instance, the earth element in all the more vividly in the mind. We have to assess this academic trend against the original purpose, unbiased by the traditional predilection for it. It is no exaggeration to say that all this tended to obscure the path to Nibbana in the course of time. The Buddha's research was something entirely different. His research into the four elements took a completely different course. In the Nidana Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha proclaims the results of his research into the four elements. Patavidhatyaham bhikkave asada pariyesanam acharim. Yo patavidhatya asadu tadajagam. Yavata patavidhatya asadu panyayame so sudit. Patavidhatyaham bhikkave adinava pariyesanam acharim. Yo patavidhatya adinavo tadajagam. Yavata patavidhatya adinavo panyayame so sudit. පටිවිධාතුයාම් භික්වේ නිස්සරණ පරියේෂණං අචරින් යම් පටිවිධාතුයා නිස්සරණං තදජ්ජගමං යාවත පටිවිධාතුයා නිස්සරණං පඤ්ඤායමේතං සුදි. Monks, I went in search of the gratification in the earth element. Whatever gratification there is in the earth element, that have I found out. Whatever is the range of the gratification of the earth element, that have I well discerned with wisdom. Monks, I went in search of the danger in the earth element. Whatever danger there is in the earth element, that have I found out. Whatever is the range of the danger of the earth element, that have I well discerned with wisdom. Monks, I went in search of the stepping out from the earth element. Whatever stepping out there is from the earth element, that have I found out. Whatever is the range of the stepping out from the earth element, that have I well discerned with wisdom. Now this is the Buddha's research into the earth element. The discourse goes on to state the same fact with regard to the other three elements. The term massada mentioned in this sutta is defined as the bodily pleasure and mental happiness, sukham somanasam, arising due to the earth element. The danger in the earth element is its impermanent, suffering and changing nature, anicca, dukkha, viparinamata. The stepping out from it is the disciplining and abandonment of desire for it, chandaraga vinyo, chandaraga pham. It is on the strength of this research that the Buddha even enjoined the reflection on the four requisites. The Aryavamsa Sutta makes this sufficiently clear. In connection with the modes of reflection on the use of the four requisites, a thematic phrase occurs which is highly significant in this concept. Laddha ca pindapatam අගතිතෝ, අමුච්චිතෝ, අනජ්ජාපන්නෝ, ආදීනව දස්සාවි, නිස්සරණපඤ්ඤෝ පරිභුජති. On getting alms food, he partakes of it without greed, uninfatuated, unenslaved, being aware of the danger in it with the wisdom in stepping off. The terms agathito, amuchito, anajjhapanno, without greed, uninfatuated, unenslaved, are suggestive of the gratification which one has to withstand. The term Adinava Dasavi, being aware of the danger, is suggestive of overeating and other possible risks in taking food. The meaning of the expression Nissarnapanya, with the wisdom in stepping out, in the highest sense, is taking food with the deep idea of abandoning food in accordance with the cryptic dictum Aharam Nissaya Aharam Pajahati, gives up food depending on food. It should be clear from the foregoing what the original idea behind the contemplation on the elements was and what happened later. The later trends seem to have ignored the fact that perception is a mirage. Research into these four elements is a matter for the physicist, though it is like chasing a mirage with thoughts and concepts. What is needed is the liberation of the mind from the perception of form that is ingrained in the minds of beings due to the four elements in this long samsara. All the meditation techniques the Buddha has taught are directed towards the fading away of this perception of form. Because of these four primaries, we have a perception of form which enables us to take signs. All the four are actually impermanent, but the perceptual data we have gathered dependent on them, are indelibly imprinted on our minds. Signs taken up in the far distant past in one samsara can come up again and again as attachments and aversions to perpetuate one's samsaric existence. Thoughts and prolific concepts arise out of this perception of form. In other words, we distinguish between one thing and another according to color and shape. By evaluating them through attachments and aversions, we allow them to get deeply rooted in our mind. These are the latencies to perception, which in the Madhupindika Sutta find mentioned in the expression sanya nanusanti. Perceptions do not lie latent. Whereas the Arahant does away with these latencies, the non-arahant entertains them to some extent or other. These latencies account for the prolific concepts with which beings heap up samsaric suffering. In order to loosen the hold of these signs on our minds, the perilous aspect of the four elements has to be emphasized. That is why the Buddha, in a number of discourses, described to the monks the impermanence of the four elements. It was not his intention to encourage any atomistic analysis. He preached about the impermanence of the four elements to expose the hollowness and vanity of this drama of existence, to erase the perception of form productive of this drama from the minds of men. Now, sankhara is a term we often come across in the Dhamma. He happened to suggest a possible nuance of the term when he brought up similes relating to the cinema and the theatre. Sankhara is a term capable of comprehending the entire range of preparations that go to make up a theatrical performance. Now, the Buddha has related the story of this great earth in some discourses, but it is not an account of a scientific experiment as our modern day scientists would offer. The Buddha describes how this great earth came up and how it gets destroyed in order to drive home into our minds the impermanence or the very stage on which we enact our samsaric drama, thereby inculcating an attitude of disenchantment and dispassion, nibbida and virag. These sankharas pertaining to our drama of existence. On this gigantic stage, the earth gets deeply imprinted in our minds. This in deep as latency is to perception, productive of existence. It is to eradicate them that the Buddha has placed before us the story of this great earth in some discourses. By far, the best illustration comes in the Aggannya Sutta of the Vidya Nikaya. According to it, at the beginning of this eon, the earth was immersed in a darkness and covered with water. The inhabitants were those who had come down from the Abhasar Brahma world. They were sexless, mind-made, feeding on joy, self-luminous, and capable of moving through the air. Manomaya, Piti Bhakha, Sayampabha, Antarikachala. After billions and billions of years, a savory earth spread itself over the waters, like the tissue that forms over hot milk as it cools. It was very sweet and tempting. Some being of a greedy nature, exclaiming, "Ah, what can this be?" tasted the savory earth with his finger. Craving arose in him as a result of it. Others who saw him doing it did the same. Then they all began digging into the savory earth with their hands and eating it, with the result that their subtle bodies became gross, hard, and solid. Craving also increased, and their minds became rougher and coarser. The environment changed in unison, becoming grosser and grosser. So we have here the perilous aspect. As the perils became manifest, the watery earth grew in solidity and the simple life grew in complexity. Billions and billions of years passed until the earth assumed its present shape and appearance with all its gigantic mountains, rocks and buildings. But then, in the Satya Surya Sutta of the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha describes what happens to this great earth at the end of the eon. As the hollow coast draws near, a second orb of the sun appears, and then a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, and a seventh. The great earth in its entirety, together with its mountains and rocks, goes ablaze, becoming just one huge flame of fire, consuming all before it without leaving any ash or soot, like in a spot where oil or ghee had burned. So here we have no room for any atomism. In conclusion, the Buddha brings out the true aim and purpose of this discourse. Evaṁ anicca bhikkhave saṅkhārā, evaṁ adhvā bhikkhave saṅkhārā, evaṁ anassāsikā bhikkhave saṅkhārā, yāmañcidam bhikkhave, alameva sabba saṅkhāresu nibbindatu. Alang virajyatun, alang vimuchyatun. So impermanent monks are preparations, so unstable monks are preparations, so unsatisfying monks are preparations, so much so, monks, this is enough to get disenchanted with preparations, this is enough to get dispassionate with them, this is enough to get released from them.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.